I have stopped being surprised by what I read in the media and the craziness that Lance alluded to that goes on in the world. But this one just took me back. There is a Canadian academic, she's a professor, who is joining what is being referred to as the lowercase movement, according to Calgary, Alberta University. Her name is Dr. Linda Minnie Guns. True story. And according to her Twitter account, she is the Associate Vice President of Indigenization and Decolonization at Mount Royal University. She said that she is joining with local leaders in this lowercase movement to reject symbols of hierarchy. We will reject symbols of hierarchy wherever they are found, and we will refuse from this day forward to use capital letters. We resist and acknowledge the power structure that capital letters are oppressive, and we join the movement that says we do not capitalize. Y'all can look this up.
My students have been doing that for years.
Then, yeah, well, yeah. I was speechless. And you know that does not happen very often. Capital letters are oppressive, and we will reject them because they suggest a hierarchy. My initial thought was that this is just kind of dangerous rhetoric, rejecting a hierarchy, particularly from a pastor's perspective or from a spiritual perspective. And in her case, it's really kind of pretty hypocritical. She makes sure that she is introduced as doctor, which itself sets yourself up in a hierarchy. She wants to make sure that you know that she has a title. She is the assistant vice president. She ain't even vice president of anything. She's the assistant vice president. But she wants you to know that she has a title, which sets her up in a hierarchy. She is joined together with local leaders, so she is associating with the power brokers who exist in a governmental hierarchy. And then there's the name. Dr. Linda Minnie Guns. How is that even woke? How can that even be culturally acceptable? Right? That name in itself is designed to intimidate and to establish herself as strong and unchallengeable. She is part of the hierarchy that she so wants to uncapitalize. You and I live in a created order, and in that created order of things, there is a hierarchy. And God the Father is the apex predator in the food chain of the hierarchy. There is none higher. And the reason the world we live in is crazy and in chaos is because from almost the beginning of humanity, that hierarchy has been challenged. Challenging the hierarchy is what got Satan thrown out of heaven in Isaiah chapter 14. And yet God has always been honest with us about who He is. And He's told us who He is in the names that He uses for Himself throughout the Scripture. So for the next several weeks, eight to be specific or exact, I want to talk about the names that God has given Himself. Because it helps us understand who He is. They tell us that there is no higher authority. His names tell us that there is no higher grace. His name tells us that there is no higher forgiveness or redeemer or shepherd or provider or stronghold. There is no higher love than the love of God Himself. And each name helps us understand Him and know Him better and on a better level. We read in Proverbs chapter 18 that the name of the Lord is a strong tower, and the righteous run into it, and the righteous are safe when you know His name. Psalm 124:8 says, our help is in the name of the Lord. His name matters. And he uses different names for himself so that you and I can know him and know his character. Otherwise, the magnitude and the majesty of God would just be so mind-boggling that we'd stay in a perpetual state of uncertainty and confusion. So the more you know about God and the more you know about his names, the closer we should be able to get to him. His names make him more approachable. Doug put something on Facebook the other day about the movie Prince of Egypt, and he was talking about something that really stood out to him and that he really liked. And my comment in that whole thread was what stood out to me, and the part that I really liked the most was the fact that it's the story of the Ten Commandments and Moses bringing the people of Israel out of bondage and slavery in Egypt. But the thing that struck me most about that was the voice that God used. Because the voice of God in the movie The Prince of Egypt is just a regular people voice. If you watch the Charlton Heston version of the Ten Commandments from back in the day, and you see the whole burning bush scene, you hear this deep rumble. Moses. Moses. If God talked to me like that, I don't know. It wouldn't have a happy ending. It'd be bad. I'd be too scared to talk to him. But in the movie Prince of Egypt, God has a regular voice. I think God has a regular voice when he talks to us. He speaks to us in a voice that is still and that is small and that is regular, not ghostly. I don't know, he might sound like James Earl Jones. God might. There is a special name that God uses for himself, and we're going to start here because God refers to it as his forever name. For all generations, he says, and through all generations, I will be remembered by this name. It is my covenant name. It is my name, Yahweh. It is my name, Yahweh. In Exodus chapter 3, if you'll find that, we are seeing the Moses story unfold. He's been in Egypt for 40 years. He's been second in command to Pharaoh. He's rich and powerful and prestigious and everything that, you know, you would want to be in the world, or that so many of us aspire to be in the world. But he winds up protecting one of his own people after he finds out that he himself is not really Pharaoh's son, but that he instead is a Hebrew. He is the child of Hebrew slaves. And there's a man who is harassing some of the Hebrew people, and Moses kills this guy. And so he's exiled into the wilderness. He goes out and crosses the desert. He meets a woman named Zipporah. He marries her, and her father is Jethro in Midian, and Jethro's a shepherd, and he's tending the sheep. And while he's out tending the sheep, he sees on Mount Sinai, or Mount Horeb, same mountain, two different names, a bush that is on fire, but that it's not burned up, it's not consumed. And Moses in chapter 3 says, I need to go check this out. And so he makes his way up the mountain to where this bush is on fire, but it's not burning. And that's where God speaks to him. And when he's there, he begins to approach the bush, and God says, hold up there, Mo. He said, you're on a holy place. I need you to take your shoes off. And so Moses does, but at the same time, this terrifies him. And so he hides his face. And if you look down at chapter 3, verse 6, he's having this encounter with this bush, and the voice of God is speaking to him. And then he said, the voice of God, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And at this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. When God speaks to him and first tells him that he is the God of Abraham and the God of Isaac and the God of Jacob, he uses the word Elohim. And it's just a term for a deity, for a god, for a ruler. It's Elohim. I'm the God. I'm the supreme authority in Abraham and Isaac and Jacob's life. I'm their God. In verse 7, the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of the people in Egypt, and I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out into the land that is good and spacious land. It is a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. I just had to leave that in there. I love that verse. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way of the Egyptians, and they are oppressing them. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Wait a minute. He's a convicted criminal. He's an exiled murderer. And God says, I'm going to send you back to the very man that pronounced your sentence on you. Verse 11. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And God said, I will be with you. And this will be a sign for you that it is I who have sent you. And when you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. And Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, well, what's his name? What do I tell them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the God of, has sent you to me. This is my name forever, the name by which I am going to be remembered from generation to generation. Now, there are several things in this passage that we have to look at, because God tells us in this entire chapter of Exodus how he is to be referred to. We've already talked about Elohim, which is the God, the one to whom we turn our affection, the authority in our life. But in verse 14, he tells Moses, I am who I am. And this is a powerful statement. It is the Hebrew word, Hayah. And the Hebrew word, Hayah, I am who I am, means I am the one who exists. I am the one who is. I am the one who has come to pass. And then, almost in the same breath, he says, not only am I Hayah, not only am I the one who exists, he said, I am the Lord. I am the Lord. The Hebrew word is Yahovah Adonai. And it means I am the self-existent and eternal one. I am the one who exists. I am the one who is, Hayah. I am Yahovah Adonai. I am self-existent. I am eternal. And then he goes back to where he started. I am Elohim. I am the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I am the supreme authority. His name tells us that he is the self-existent, eternal God. His name tells us that he is, or I am, Yahweh. It is his forever name, and it goes from generation to generation. It is used almost 7,000 times in the Old Testament. It's used over 650 times in the book of Psalms alone. When you're looking at your text and you see the word Lord, L-O-R-D, in all capital letters, it is the Hebrew word Yahweh. Rabbis, even to this day, simply refer to it as the name. They don't pronounce it. And the reason they don't pronounce it is so that they don't ever take it in a way that breaks one of the first commandments, to take the Lord's name in vain. And so they just don't pronounce it. So here's the question for us today. What does the name Yahweh teach us about God? What does the name I am Yahweh teach us about God? Let's talk about three things. Reality number one, the I am Yahweh name for God tells us that he is the source of life. Moses says in verse 13, what's your name? What shall I say to them? And he says, you tell them that I am Yahovah Adonai. I am Yahah, or Hayah, Yahovah Adonai. I am who I am. It comes from a verb in Hebrew, which, as we talked about, means to exist. But by saying it of himself, and he ties it together with Yahweh, which also comes from the verb that means to be, to live, he says that I have life. I am life. I am the source of life. I am the self-existent one. I have always been. David confirms this in Psalm 90. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, you brought forth the earth and the world from everlasting to everlasting. You are God. In Genesis chapter 1, Moses says that in the beginning, what? God. Pretty simple statement. In the beginning, God. I have always been. I am self-existent one. I am the source of life, the creator of life, the sustainer of life. It is in my name. There is no life apart from me. Reality number one is that the I Am Yahweh God is the source of life. Reality number two, the I Am Yahweh God is everything you need. Moses is having an interesting conversation with the Lord. The Lord is relating to him and talking to him in a very human sense. And he says, I'm sending you back to Pharaoh. I've heard the cries of my people. I'm sending you back. And the reason I'm sending you back is because you're going to be my mouthpiece to Pharaoh. And you're going to tell Pharaoh that my people are going to be set free. And then Moses, in a deeply human moment, asks a really dumb question. And the first thing out of Moses' mouth is, well, who am I? And the answer really is, well, Moses, you're really kind of a nobody. But you're the one that I'm going to use. And Moses said, but I don't talk too good. God's like, I know. That's why I'm using you. Moses argues with him again. God says, Moses, what do you got in your hand? He says, stick. God says, throw it down. Moses throws it down and turns into a snake. Because see, it wasn't about who Moses was. It was about who God was. And then for Moses to begin to understand this, Moses, it's not about who you are. It's about who I am. He tells Moses, he said, that snake that's slithering around down there, that poisonous snake that's slithering around there, that asp that is very deadly that's slithering around down there that I just made from your stick. Yeah. Pick it up. What? Yeah. Pick it up. Pick up the deadly asp. Pick up the poisonous snake. Because it's not about who you are, Moses. It's about who I am. And if I tell you that you can pick that thing up and you're going to be fine, then you can pick it up and you're going to be fine. And so Moses reaches down and picks it up and the snake turns back into a stick. Because it's not about Moses. Moses said, who am I? You aren't anybody. But I'm going to use you. We do this all the time. We're just like Moses in this regard. We say, and I hear this so much. People say, well, who am I to receive forgiveness? Well, we're really nobody. But because of the grace of Yahweh, I am God, it's offered to us. Well, who am I to teach a class? Well, you're nobody. But God is everything. He's all you need. Who am I to disciple somebody else? Well, you're nobody. But God is everything. Who am I to tell somebody the gospel story? Well, we're nobody. But God says, I entrust you with the gospel story. Because the power of the gospel story is in me, not in you. Who am I that I should expect other people around me to be held to a standard of biblical accountability? Well, you're nobody. But as brothers and sisters in Christ, as the body of believers, we owe that to the great I Am to do that. In love. Who am I to lead a ministry? Well, you're nobody. But God is the giver of everything. And so he uses the ordinary to tap into his power so that the extraordinary can come to life. We also approach it from the opposite angle. And instead of saying, who am I? that I should carry out such a noble task, we approach it from the vantage point of, do you know who I am? It is beneath me to help in the nursery. Do you know who I am? I am too valuable to give up a Saturday morning to cut the grass. Do you know who I am? I am too gifted to clean the restrooms and to vacuum. Do you know who I am? I am too busy with my own personal stuff to sacrifice time for the church. Do you know who I am? I've been in church a long time. I do not need to be discipled. You see, it's not who you are. It's certainly not who you think you are. It's about, I am Yahweh God. Then Moses asks a second question, and in all honesty, it's a better question. He asks a question that pertains to his obedience. He says, when I go to the Jews and I say to them, I've been sent by God, they're going to ask me, what's your name? So what do I tell them? And God's answer is, you tell them, I am who I've always been. I am who I've always been. In every circumstance, in every situation, in every area of life, he has always been the great I am. In the beginning, the great I am. He has never been, and I need you to hear me on this, the great I was. He has never been the great I will be. He is always present tense, I am. And he will always be present tense, I am. Just like for Abraham, I was present tense, I am. Just like Isaac, I was present tense, I am. Just like Jacob, I was present tense, I am. I am present tense. I'm always present tense. I'm up to date. I'm always fresh. I'm always cutting edge because I am. Maybe you're lonely today. I am a friend who sticks closer than a brother. Maybe you're guilty today. I am the one who forgives your sin. Maybe you're unemployed today. I am your hope. Maybe your body is racked with a disease today. I am your peace. Maybe you hunger and thirst for your best life and you want to live your best life. He says, I am the bread of life and I am the living water. Whatever you need, wherever your struggle in life is, I am a very present help in time of trouble. I am here, now, present, always have been, always will be. Reality number three. I am Yahweh God who became man. I am the self-existent, eternal, living one. And I became man. The name Jesus literally means Yahweh saves. Can it not be more clear? His name tells you his purpose. Yahweh saves. Four separate occasions, Jesus in no uncertain terms let everybody that was listening and everybody who was recording know and understand that he was the great I am. He told it to the Jews in John chapter 8. He said, you shall know the truth and the truth shall make you free. And they said, whoa, we already free. We're sons of Abraham, and we've never been enslaved to any man. I think that is so funny, because Rome had them by the throat. But in their own religiosity and in their own spiritual arrogance, they're like, we've never been slaved to anybody. Good grief, their whole history was about being slaves. And Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, say it with me, I am. So they picked up stones to throw at him. But Jesus hid himself and went away to the temple. He told the Jews in no uncertain terms, I am. He also told his disciples, We read Matthew 28, verse 20, teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always, even to the ends of the age. Even until the ends of the age, I am. Up until now, I've always been I am. And up until the end, I always will be I am. He also made sure Rome understood who he was. On the night Jesus was betrayed before he was crucified, John chapter 18 says, now Judas, who betrayed him, knew the place because Jesus had met there often with his disciples. So Judas came to the grove, guiding a detachment of soldiers and some officials from the chief priests and the Pharisees. And they were carrying torches and lanterns and weapons. And Jesus, knowing all that was going to happen to him, went out and asked them, who is it you want? Jesus of Nazareth, they replied. Say it with me. I am he, Jesus said. And Judas, the traitor, was standing there with him. And when Jesus said, I am he, they drew back and fell to the ground. Jesus declared very loudly to the Romans that he is and always was and always will be. But he also declared it to the religious. Mark chapter 14. The high priest stood before the others and asked Jesus, aren't you going to answer these charges again? This was the night he was to be crucified. And he was kind of on trial in the kangaroo court. What do you say for yourself? But Jesus was silent and made no reply. And then the high priest asked him, are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One? And Jesus said, say it with me, I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated in the place of power at God's right hand and the coming on the clouds from heaven. Just like God visited Moses in the burning bush and told him, I am. Jesus came at the day of his crucifixion and reminded everybody, I am. Think about how fascinating this is. The two times recorded in the scripture where God's physical presence showed up and announced and proclaimed his name as the I am were both opportunities and moments of redemption. He shows up in Exodus when he is going to redeem and set his people free from the bondage of slavery. And he says, I am. That's who sent me. And in the New Testament, when Jesus shows up on the night that he's going to be crucified, he once again announces at the moment of redemption, I am. Are you the Messiah? I am. The reason that's critical is because there is no name under heaven whereby you might be saved. You can only be delivered from the bondage of your sin through the great I am. Today we celebrate the Lord's Supper. Today we celebrate the delivery and the redemption of the great I am. I'm going to call the deacons to come forward and prepare the table. And as they do, you need to remember and you need to consider. Jesus said, I am the bread. And Jesus said, my blood is the cup of the new covenant. I am the new covenant. So as the deacons come to prepare the table this morning, realize and remember that each of the elements is a moment that pronounces the great I am. The bread says, I am the bread of life. The cup says, I am the new covenant come down from heaven.